This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
What? I'm learning so much right now.
And Brock Rom.
I think JP froze, because I was waiting for him to jump in. Like, we usually have a cadence.
Hey, it is just a badge of honor.
Welcome to episode 7. Not sure if you could tell, but we had some technical difficulties. Okay, a lot of technical difficulties, which is kind of fitting for today's topic. How to stand out when applying for a job.
3, 2, 1, clap.
All right, I hadn't started recording on my external record, so we're going to have to redo the clap.
Oh, man.
All right, guys. Well, that was a good podcast. I think we nailed it. Let's wrap.
Hey, it's Justin here, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to APM for providing that track for us here on the Sports Creative Podcast. We're doing this podcast as an extension of the Sports Creative community on Slack, so if you're finding us and aren't part of the community yet, you can sign up for free at sportscreativeslack.com. All right, so let's kick this episode off. We're going to talk about hiring and the application process and how we go about how people go about applying and things that stand out from people who have done hiring in the past. So before we get into that, I just wanted to ask you both, what is a job that you've had before that you think applies to today that you didn't realize would apply to today when you were when you had that job when you were younger? So Brock, let's start with you.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I worked for a local fast food chain in Nebraska called Runza, which I know Justin and Garrett are, they know about. Garrett, you can't, this plays really well on a on an audio podcast, but Garrett's pumping his fist right now because he loves Runza so much.
Was it the rock and roll Runza?
I don't know what the rock and roll Runza is, I'm not going to lie.
Oh man, it was downtown. They had servers on the old roller skates.
No, you got to understand, I was in the middle of nowhere. We didn't, rock and roll didn't exist in my town, man. Come on. It was like Footloose out there. No. I worked in a small town at a Runza, and I was very early on, probably about 16 years old, I was made a shift manager, which was an insane thing to do, like to make, like, I don't think that was company policy or anything. I think that's, you know, just absolutely insane. But what it made me do is I had to manage kids who were my age or older. And that was tough to do. And I'm not going to sit here and say I was really good at it. But what it made me realize is I had to be very aware of what it's like to manage peers that may have maybe older than you, may have more experience than you, and understand that you were put in that role not because you're the oldest or you have the most experience. It's because you think you can do this specific set of things well, right? So it made me focus on, okay, I know how to close and open really well and close out drawers and make sure things are prepped. That's why they put me in this position, right? And then I had to relay that to the team of just the tasks of getting us prepped and getting us ready to go. And at the time, I was just like, oh, this is just a dumb fast food job. I'm getting to try and pay for a car, right? Like, but there were some life lessons there that, you know, not all positive life lessons, right? But there were life lessons there that I definitely carried over across my entire career.
I would say for me, it was actually a college job I had. So we worked at, I worked at Husker Vision during kind of the academic year, that September to May window when sports are happening. But during the summer, there just wasn't much going on. So, you know, I still wanted to make money, and I just kind of asked my bosses, you know, is there anything else I could do within the athletic department to get paid? And I ended up getting put on the athletic department mail route. And so I worked in the mail room at the University of Nebraska inside Memorial Stadium. And it just felt like it was going to be the most menial job. And what I was doing would not matter at all, you know, as far as developing my skill set. But one of the things I learned was, like, everything at Husker Vision was so project driven outside of the live event space. And doing the mail route, like, I had to be, like, meticulously on schedule. Like, these people within the department knew when the mail person was supposed to be there. Like, 3:30 p.m., I had to be over at baseball every day. You know, by 2:15, I had to be up to the AD's office. Like, I had to keep a strict schedule, and just that discipline and like knowing exactly where to be when and planning my day well actually translated a lot more than I thought it would. And on top of that, I got to know everyone in the athletic department, like learning how to build relationships with those people that I would see every day and, you know, just making small talk. And, you know, I was just an awkward kid, like through high school and into early college. And just being able to build those relationships has been really good for me now. You know, I learned how to talk to people and how to make people feel comfortable with you. And that was literally all just from wandering around, seeing the same people in the athletic department and handing them their mail or taking it from them. And it actually ended up being a really fun summer job. And I only did it one summer, but it's probably my favorite summer job I've ever had. Just wandering around Memorial Stadium and handing mail to either, you know, administrative assistants or directly to people in the department.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I think mine is related to food service as well. I started my career working at Papa John's and was a busboy at Buca di Beppo before I ended up getting to be a server when I turned 19, because that was the limit. And I've worked Cold Stone when I was back in the summer from college. And all of those jobs, being in food service, having some serving experience, actually helped me out when I was a seasonal with the Bears. So for Christmas, we got a $100 gift card to this restaurant called Wildfire. Garrett, I'm sure you've heard of it because it's in Chicago. Letterson to Chain You is a big corporation there that has a bunch of different restaurants, and Wildfire is part of that. And it's a great restaurant. It's a high-end steakhouse and tons of good food. And so my wife and I went there for dinner, and we used the gift card, and obviously it says Chicago Bears. And then they also had a discount that went along with it. So then the general manager came over and came up to our table and started talking to us, and, you know, obviously Bears fan, and said, "Well, let me know if there's anything you need." And when my seasonal internship ended in February, I was looking for a job, and thinking back of all the different jobs that I had, I was like, "Well, I can be a server. Like that's something that I've done before." So I reached out to him, and they hired me. And the way that they did it is that you started on lunches and you worked your way. You had to work there for 3 or 4 months before you got on to dinners. And that's really where you made all the money, was dinner. So you really had to learn. And along that process, they do wine training for you. You had to, in order to pass, you had to pass tests for lunch to get on the floor. And you started with two tables at a time. And their big thing was, A, they train you well. B, you better be good at your job and make sure that you're serving the people and making sure that you're, you know, thinking about multiple things at once. So if you have two tables and you go to the back, if you need something at both tables, you better not be making two trips. And then just the attention to detail. And I think this is a big part of where I got some of that background from, is I had to take a test where I'm not in the kitchen. I had to write down every single item that was in food, down to pepper, cumin, any of the seasonings, because when people came in and they had food allergies, they didn't want people going to the back into the kitchen to say, "Hey, does this have this or this or this?" Like, that was my job to learn that. And so trying to understand how all that works together, from the kitchen to the washroom, to being the server on the floor, how all the different pieces all work together, and having a good sense of all of them, I think has really helped me today, and trying to see the bigger picture and understand what other people's jobs are in relation to yours, so that you can be a better server, but also be a better teammate in return too. So I worked that job. Of course, I was getting promoted to dinners right as I got an offer from the Bears for the full-time position after my seasonal, like 4 months later. So I didn't stay there too long as doing dinners, but it was a great interim job that I felt fortunate that I had a background in order to be able to take that job in the middle, so that I could survive. You know, that's really what it was about, is making money so that I could pay my rent and make it through, and it was great. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think having those kind of jobs is so important, because you just realize, you know, how much everyone plays a role.
So one of the things that we always used to get frustrated by was getting double set. Like, that's a big no-no from the host station, right? It's like, well, you double set me, and if you go up there and talk to the host, then they go, well, you're really the only option because this person has this table and this table reserved, and there's just a whole bunch of different pieces and how things fit together. It's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, even work in the mailroom, like, attention to detail and, you know, knowing how important that person in the mailroom is, it's crazy. 'Cause like I was in charge of making sure that, like, probably giant contracts were getting posted and mailed out on time. Like, 800 recruit mailings from the football team going out when they're supposed to and getting to, like, the right players. Like, I was a 19-year-old in charge of that. And that's wild. Like, you have to be able to trust every single person at every single position through your organization to do things and do things well, because as soon as one little piece of it falls apart, you know, it all falls apart. And it's, having been in those entry level roles and kind of more of those service jobs, it just gives you such a different perspective on, you know, an organization, even now, you know, 15 years down the road.
Yeah. And I think that kind of leads us right into the topic for today, talking about when you're applying for a job. You know, we're in the state of COVID, and we are, you know, a lot of people are looking for people who are versatile or who can step into different roles and take on different projects, maybe outside of their comfort zone, a little bit of their skill set. So I think that really is probably a big question that people are going to get asked along the way if they're interviewing or going through the process, is understanding, A, what your skill set is, but what is your attitude when you get asked to do something that is outside of your skill set?
Yeah, I think even before this happened, what I've always looked for in young professionals, and I'm really speaking, you know, straight out of college, entry level here, is I always lean towards hiring people who do personal projects that they're passionate about, right? And that doesn't necessarily have to be in sports. Like, if you have a short film you worked on in college, or, you know, a social post you worked on for a friend of yours who's on the volleyball team or the swim team or whatever have you, or you went out and you shot something with some of your personal gear and you put it together in a project that wasn't for any real deliverable, I always like to see that kind of motivation in somebody, especially at an entry-level position, because it means, A, they're engaged with the industry, they want to learn, they're willing to go outside of work hours to learn it, and B, it shows that they can easily learn those skills on their own, right? And they're able to grasp concepts maybe a little bit more easily. So I think what this has done, especially for a lot of young professionals and maybe professionals that don't have kids, it's been really tough. I know, Justin, you know, having a kid and two parents that work full time and not having a daycare open, it gets a little bit tougher to do this type of stuff when you're, you know, passing a toddler back and forth. But for those that do have a little bit more time, it's really been a good scenario where you can do at least some of that stuff, or at least dive into After Effects and teach yourself After Effects or Cinema 4D, or maybe you've always wanted to jump into DaVinci Resolve for color grading or move to DaVinci Resolve for editing. Those are the types of things that I know I'm personally going to look for when I'm hiring, especially those entry-level employees, is like, okay, what skills did you pick up in this downtime, or did you pick up any, or is your last reel, you know, only contain work you did before all this hit?
Yeah. And I mean, to your point, I think that's so much bigger than even, you know, this kind of period that we're in. Like, anytime you can find people who have passion projects or things that they want to do, like, for me, I think the biggest thing I look for is, you know, passion about the industry. Like, I've been on a few hiring committees, you know, I've hired a crap ton of students, back when I was at Minnesota before. And like, I just feel like I will take someone who is like, I know nothing about broadcast, but like is super excited about it, over someone who thinks they know everything already. Like, it's just, and like, it's obviously, you know, you got to have a skill set, you have to have, like, I'm talking more for like really, really entry level college, like positions. But when you're full time, like even someone with the same skill set, I'll take the person who has more passion any day of the week. Like, even if you have less talent, I would take the person with more passion every day of the week. Like, you know, that person's going to work hard. You know, they're going to bust their butt for you. And like, sometimes with people who think they know everything, or like, you know, you have to break habits. And I'd rather get someone who's more excited about learning than, you know, someone who thinks they already know it all and have this insane range of skills.
The number one thing that I look at is people's reels.
Yeah, reels. I get, especially since I work with a lot of students at Notre Dame, I get sent reels all the time of like, hey, do you have any advice for my reel? And 9 times out of 10, like, the feedback is exactly the same for everybody. Like, everybody feels like their reel needs to be like 5 to 8 minutes long, and it needs to contain like excerpts from every single project they've ever worked on in their entire career. And like, the feedback I feel like I constantly give students I work with is, make it shorter, put only your best stuff in there, and put it up front, and in some way, shape, or form, tell me what you did on the piece. Right? Because there's always that gray area of like, did they shoot this? Did they edit this? Did they direct this? Did they produce this? Did they write this? Right? Nobody is going to be upset with a little explainer graphic down in the bottom corner, or however you want to be creative and do it. But telling me what you did on a piece, or even sectioning out, doing, you know, videographer, cinematographer, editor, writer, you know, and segmenting your reel that way. Just don't leave any ambiguity, because the last thing you want to do is apply for a job, have somebody think you did something on your reel, hire you thinking you have that skill, and then getting brought into the job and not having that skill. Right? That's a bad situation on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, trying to trick your way into any job is just like the world's worst idea, because you're going to get exposed so quick in this world. You know, it's such a hands-on world that, like, if you didn't do it, they're going to find out quick, and then your life is going to be a whole lot more miserable than if you had just been upfront about what you're capable of.
Right.
So would you recommend putting only what you had, like, when you get into some complicated scenarios where someone designs something, you edit it, someone else does the VO, and there's a lot of intricacies there. I'm not sure how much of the world a lot of people, especially entry level, live in that regard, but how much would you say people should just put, if you specifically worked on shots and you have enough for a 1 minute reel, that you put only things that you did specifically in there, and how does that change?
I think it depends on the job you're applying for, right? If you're applying for a job where the top job requirement is, you know, videography, cinematography, right? I would do a reel that's just 90% that, right? If you're going into a motion graphics job, I really probably only want to see your motion graphics reel, right? If you're doing an all over producer, I think that's, to me, when it comes back to, just identify what you did in the piece, right? Whether that's shooting or editing or motion graphics or design or whatever have you. Yeah, I think just identifying that in some way, and you can get as creative as you want with it, I think is important.
With reels too, one other thing that I think we should definitely call attention to, and just in with how people apply, since the reel is a primary piece of your application, you don't know, every organization is different in how they go about bringing in applications, because you're required typically to have a cover letter, resume, and for these jobs, it's mostly about reels. So when you apply, you should make sure that you have your reel and or a link to video or your graphic design work, any of your creative work, on every piece of collateral, so that it makes it easy for the person looking for it to find. And then beyond that, when people, whatever link you put up there, you're responsible for making sure that they get pulled in, right? You hear all the time that people look at things for 10 to 20 seconds, and then that's kind of the judgment period to know if they should keep exploring. And that's the whole point of having a shorter reel, is so that, you know, if your reel stands out, then, you know, we'll go exploring further about some of the other more full length pieces. And, oh, this one was cool, maybe I'll check this one out and see what the full story looked like.
Yeah, I that's my pet peeve. I have three pet peeves on resumes. Sorry, and I'm going to go through them here, and you're going to listen to them. You're going to like it. First of all, no link to your reel or no website on there, right? If I have to reach back out and ask you for it, that's already like a negative in my book. You should be proud enough of that reel and your work that you want to put it on everything. Two, and this is mostly entry-level employees, and this is very specific to this industry, I could not care less what your GPA was in college. Unless you got a perfect 4.0 while balancing plates on your head, like, I don't care about your 3.52 or your 2.9. Like, it does not matter to me at all, right? It's all about your work. It's all about your past experiences. It's all really a lot about your references. How are people going to speak about you, right? And if your GPA is below a 3, just don't put it on there anyway. There's no reason to put it on there. I don't care. I'm not going to go and ask for your transcripts. And then keeping resumes to one page. I'm a big one page guy, cover letter plus resume being one page, especially for mid to entry level positions. I think keeping that to one page is really, really essential.
I got a 3-page resume once from a college kid applying for a job that was like a college junior. I could not believe there were 3 pages. It was the most fascinating thing I've ever seen.
I got to add a 4th bullet to your list, and that is naming your resume. Because when you get a ton of resumes and they all say resume underscore 2020, and I'm going through reels and I find one that I like, I'm like, oh, let me go look at their resume and see what their other experience is. And I have to click through 20 of them just to find it. If you name your resume, and I think that kind of gets into a lot of this, right? Details matter and stand out, whether that's in your cover letter and resume, whether that's in your reel, the time and energy that you put into your reel will show through. And a lot of that, the reason it shows through is because of the detail elements.
Yeah, attention to detail is big for me too. You know, I'm sure you guys feel the same way, being journalism majors, but just, you know, proper grammar, good spelling in your cover letter, just, you know, proofread it, have somebody else edit it for you, make sure, you know, you didn't misspell a company you worked for, or a project you worked on. Those little things that are just like, well, this person can't be detailed enough on their resume, how are they going to be detailed enough in their work to make sure this doesn't get through?
Well, I just think to your point about detail, I think it, yeah, I mean, that just covers everything about the job, you know, interview process and hiring process. Like, details are everything. Like, it's what's going to set you apart from someone who, like, usually when I look at resumes, there's like a third that, you know, I can just get rid of immediately. Like, I see it and I'm like, okay, there's no way. And then the other 2/3, like, sometimes there's a really small margin, you know, and that attention to detail is the difference a lot of times, where like, okay, you've laid this out in a clean, thoughtful way that I can like glance over quick. Like, you're going to the front of the line. Like, obviously, you got to have the talent to back that up. I'm not saying, like, you know, your clean resume is what's getting you a job, but like, the margins are thin when you're applying for these jobs. There are only so many positions, you know, in this industry, and especially in sports. Like, people want to work in sports, and you have to be on your game when you're applying for these things. Otherwise, someone else who's thinking of every one of those details is going to be the one that gets the job.
I'll never forget when I was at the Chiefs, we were hiring a producer position, and being in the NFL, obviously when people see those jobs comes through, just anybody and everybody who thinks they have one qualification will apply for it, because it's a dream job for a lot of people. I think we had 500 applicants for one producer position. And when you have applications like that, you are just looking for reasons to get rid of resumes, right? And like you said, Garrett, a lot of them are bulk, just like, this person is just applying, shot in the dark. They've never worked in sports before. They've never worked in video before. They work in radio or what have you. They're not really qualified for this position. But you get in that mentality of like, I have 500 resumes or I have 500 applicants. I'm just looking at a hot, very high level just to like cull the herd. Right. So it's important, you know, to have those things on there that don't, that aren't little mistakes that would make your resume get tossed in the bin with the rest of those.
Well, I think to your point about culling the herd, I think that's a great way to think about this process in general. You know, like, how can I make myself stand out? And there's a lot of ways to do it, but connections in this industry are everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like networking, and like, that's what makes the Slack channel so great, is like, there's this opportunity to reach out directly to people and network with people and just get to know people. And like, for job interviews, like, if you know someone at that company, like, reach out. Find out who the hiring manager is. Like, find out, you know, is this someone that I can like talk to directly for like an informal interview before I start the process? Like, just get your name known within the organization if you're applying for jobs, if you can. Like, it's not always possible, and especially when you're just starting out, you might have to apply just blind and hope your resume gets pulled. But especially as you make your way through the industry, that's one thing I've really found, is like, the smallest connection to, you know, that school or like someone who's doing the hiring, like, they will say, hey, look at this resume. And like, that already culls you from the herd. Like, you're already going to get a deeper look. You're already going to get a little more, you know, attention paid to what your skills are if you know someone that can vouch for you with the people doing the hiring. So like, man, like, get your name out there and work hard at networking, because it pays off in such a huge, huge way in this process.
Also, I know we've talked about it a lot here before with Husker Vision, but I'd almost guarantee you're not the only person from your school going into this industry in the past 10 years, right? Find out who's out there from your school working in the industry and get in contact with them, because people will often hire from programs in colleges because they like the talent that's came out of that program before. I know at Notre Dame, we hired one producer, John Cotton, from Oklahoma State. That led to another hire from Oklahoma State that led to another hire from Oklahoma State, right? Automatically, when we got an Oklahoma State kid, we said, oh, okay, they already have this level of knowledge. We know it because we've worked with Oklahoma State kids before, right? Oklahoma State's not the only one we've done that with, but it's the most recent one that I can think of that was like, it's a lot easier to know the base that those kids have coming into it than somebody from someplace else who has a similar reel.
So let's take the networking part out of it, and let's say you're cold applying for a job, you get a phone interview. What can you do or show in that part of the interview process that would stand out?
I think for me, especially on the first interview, and especially when it's like entry level or like, you know, younger producers, like, I'm willing to, like, I understand you might be nervous. Like, I'm willing to, you know, forgive, you know, that, but like, I just want to see knowledge and passion. Like, and there are a lot of ways you can display that. Like, that's kind of up to your own unique personality and the way you do it. But one of the things that really stands out to me, and people harp on it all the time, but I'll back it up. Like, ask good questions. Like, I want to know that you've researched this job, that you know what it would entail, that like, you know, you're familiar. Like, one of the things, and I don't know, maybe this is like 10 years ago when I first started out of school, but one of the things I did was like, I had a phone interview with ESPN right out of school, and like, I found out the producers that I was going to be on the call with, or that they let me know, like, these are the people you'll be talking to. I researched every little thing I could find out about them. Like, and one of the producers like really loved Advanced Graphics, but was like kind of souring on him. And so like, I asked him questions about like, you know, Advanced Graphics, and like, he responded like in a big way. Like, you could hear him light up. Like, it was something he was passionate about as far as, you know, new stuff that they were able to do with the technology and whether it was worth it and whether it added to the viewer experience. And like, just having that conversation, like probably made me stand out. And, you know, I just think that if you ask the right questions, if you connect with people on that level and show that like you're excited about the job, you know what it would entail, and you understand like the industry on a deeper level with your questions, like that stands out to me huge.
Yeah, I think research is huge. One question I'm always going to ask every applicant, especially at an entry level, is what content do we make that you like and what do you not like and how would you improve on it, right? I automatically know if they did any research for this job at all. The other thing I also like in a phone over interview is just being honest about your weaknesses, but showing that you're willing to learn it, right? I don't care if you've never directed a ESPN3 broadcast, right? What I do care about is like you saying, oh, I really want to learn how to do that. That's a bucket list item for me and I want to get really good at it, you know, or I'm willing to take on anything to help the department because I'm passionate about it. Those are so much better than trying, like we said earlier, to try and flub something, you know, and try and make it seem like you've done something that you haven't done.
Yeah, going back to the reels too, once I get past that first set of reels, I do also like going back to see if I can trace back maybe in the past year or two development and improvement. And I know, Garrett, you mentioned this earlier about wanting to see a passion and a development and a willingness to learn. And one of the top questions that I always ask is, what have you learned recently? And what do you want to learn next? Because then I get a sense of,
I love that.
Yeah, it's a great question.
I know that you're interested and engaged in what you're doing, but that B, you're not satisfied and are willing to take the next step. And a lot of times once you get into, I always use reading as an example. I was never really a huge reader, but I got this 99U series of three books and it's just snippets from different people. And once I got into it and I read some stuff, I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to go find this person's book. And it just kind of builds off of that. So taking something that you have interest in, going after it, developing your skills, and then figuring out a way to build your skills on top of that, that kind of marries back. And it's almost like a ladder that goes back and forth where you keep building skills that keep coming back and giving you more and development to be able to continue to grow and escalate what you're capable of doing.
The other thing I'm really big on in interviews is I pay attention to how much somebody uses I versus we. We all work in very collaborative, team-based environments. I'd be hard-pressed, unless you were at a smaller school, that you did everything yourself. So I like it when people say, oh, we did this, or I have a great team around me. I was happy to be able. I'd rather hire somebody who's good in a team environment and had help on projects to make them better than somebody who sat there and said, well, I just did this all myself, because it goes to show. And I've had a lot of talented people. I've worked with a lot of talented people who are very talented on their own, but are bad in team environments, right? And their work suffers because of it, no matter how talented they are. Nobody does anything on their own in a vacuum. So I like hearing the word we during interviews.
And that can definitely be a challenge when you're going through the interview process though, right? Because you're trying to sell yourself. So how do you make that distinction of trying to highlight what you're capable of while also tying in the we?
Right. Yeah. I think there's totally a way to outline your role in the project while still recognizing you worked in a collaborative team environment to make it better. Right. I don't think the two are mutually exclusive. I think one thing that I took from the times I've spent with Jeff Schmall, I never worked with Jeff Schmall, but I've talked to him plenty before he passed, but he always talked about how he wanted to surround himself with people that are smarter than him. Right. I think that is something that everybody from the top down can utilize, right? Because there's always going to be somebody smarter than you or better than you at your job. It's just how things are. There's you're not going to be the best at everything. So recognizing that there are people around you with really great skill sets, and B, that you're willing to utilize those skill sets to make yourself and your project better, is a huge asset, right? So I think, I don't think they need to be mutually exclusive. I think you can say, hey, here's what I did on this project, but it wouldn't have been possible without this or this. I worked really hard with my graphic. Like, my big thing is, I know After Effects extremely well from a technical standpoint, expressions, curves, that sort of stuff. I am a terrible designer. I am just a garbage visual designer. I'm really bad at it. I can't do motion graphics projects without working with a graphic designer, right? So it would be, I personally wouldn't present a motion piece I did and just say, yeah, I designed that, or yeah, I did all this, or and not mention, oh, I leaned really heavily on my designer here. Because then somebody's probably going to hear that and say, like, oh, they want to be on brand. They want to work with our designers. They want to keep that brand vertical constant, which is important to a lot of organizations, right? So they're 9 times out of 10 like that you work with a designer on a motion project, right? Yep. So I just personally want to make sure that I don't oversell myself into being some sort of unicorn that can do everything, because that doesn't exist. But I also want them to know what my real skill set is.
Yeah, and if you add in, Garrett, if you add in the social media aspect of that, how much weight do you put on people's personal profiles?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of to Brock's point, like, there's this balance of, like, we versus me on the production side. And I think social media, you know, I always, more so when we get down to finalists or people we're going to do interviews with, but, like, I'll go through their social media channels and just see, you know, what are you posting? You know, are you, when you talk about videos that have been, you've been a part of, like, are you saying we versus me? Like, is it like, look at what I made, look at what I made. And you know that there's 3 or 4 people that had their hands on that. Like, it just, to me, it's just a personality thing. Like, there's nothing like inherently wrong with it, but like, I just want to know that you're going to play as a team. And I think social media kind of tends to bring that out of you, because your natural instinct on social is to say, like, look what I did. This is my project. This is my thing. And if you're willing to on social media say, like, look at this thing me and like my team created, or look at this thing that like we created as a department, like, it goes against the grain, right, on social media. So it stands out to me when I see people, you know, on a, what is inherently a me first platform of like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, if you're willing to be team based on there, like, it eases a lot of my worries about what you're going to be like as a team player if we bring you in as a hire.
Yeah, I'll be honest with you. It's a big red flag for me when somebody has a social media account and they're posting work, and either directly or indirectly solely attributing it to themselves. And I'll bring it up in an interview. You know, I'll just ask, what did you do on this? Did you do this from start to finish? It's not saying people don't own projects from start to finish and they do every aspect of it. That happens. That happens a lot, you know, but it probably doesn't happen over and over and over for, you know, 30 videos in a row, right? So I always see that as a red flag, not a don't hire, but like as a, I want to address this and see what actually was done on these.
Yeah, it's one of like many things you look at. That's not like a make or break, but it's definitely something that I think is overlooked as part of the process when you're a candidate. Like, be very aware of how you're talking and what language you're using.
I think one of the things that we've largely been talking about here is trying to separate the talking from the doing, and understanding and getting a really good understanding of the skill set that you are portraying and that you have, and how it fits in with the team, and what you would bring and add. And so a lot of the times, even trying to understand what we have on our team and who's interested in doing what, having a specific interest going forward, whether that's in VR, AR, or something along those lines that you have a strong interest in that we don't specifically have on our team right now, that is also something that is of interest to me.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And I, under skills, I totally think it's fine. If you have a hobbyist interest, and you know, I'll just piggyback off VR, AR, right? And you have a hobbyist interest, I think it's okay to put that skill. If it's a skill set you've learned, put it underneath your skill sets, even if it's tangentially applicable to the job, right? I'm a hobbyist audio engineer. I would never call myself a professional audio engineer, but I'm a hobbyist audio engineer. Obviously, that's a very like direct correlation to video and what I do, but I would definitely put that skill set down on my resume because it is a skill set I had that I learned on my own. You know, same with AR, VR, developing. If you know JavaScript, if you know Python, if you know objective-based languages at all, you know, I know that would stand out huge for us because we have a lot of applications for that, right? It's kind of a stretch of a crossover. You can probably make more money being a developer than you can in video production, so maybe rethink your career choices. But if you have those skills, I think it's important. You might not think it's related, but it might be.
Yeah, that's a great point, Brock, just bringing in additional skill sets. And let's just close by talking about what one thing is that we would distill from this conversation and how you would provide feedback to someone that is applying for a job. Garrett?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing that I look for in candidates is really just curiosity and passion. And I said it earlier, but if there's one thing that I would take away from this, at least from my perspective, it's just like, be knowledgeable about the position you're applying for, like be able to talk about their content that they're creating, what you like about it, be willing to talk about what you don't like about it and what you think you maybe could improve upon, and not in like a bragging way, but you know, in a, hey, I would think about this way maybe, and show off, like just show off the way you think about things, because that's as important a skill set as anything, right? Is the strategy side, and it's hard to show on a demo reel. So if you can kind of talk your way through that in an interview and say like, this is how I think about things, to me that really sets someone apart and shows, you know, just a level of care and thoughtfulness that's hard to get across on a piece of paper or in a demo reel. So in the interview process, I really think asking questions and, you know, being willing to talk about, you know, your thought process is every bit as important as actually showing what you're capable of from a skill standpoint.
Yeah. For me, I think, passion is just such a big one for me. Passion and then honesty. I think passion and honesty will get you a long ways in this industry, knowing where your shortcomings are and knowing where you need to work on yourself. I think is a great, thing to learn early on. So those are really my big things, especially in an entry level type position, is that passion, that honesty.
And I think one of the things that we kind of touched on, I know I touched on a little bit with development, is also being self-sufficient too, right? That being able to understand that you don't understand something and look it up for yourself and have that ability to use Google, to use your resources to your benefit, that goes a long ways as well. And I think that kind of bleeds over into the development. And if you're interested in looking into growing your skill set and the growth opportunities that you have that will allow you to chart your own path in a way, I think those are all things that are, you know, tying back with what both of you said, that all leads to a great candidate. And at the end of the day, you know, when people are hiring, they could be looking for different things. So just because one place is wanting a specific skill set or your interest doesn't align with what they're looking for, maybe they already have someone similar to you on their team, doesn't mean that you should back off of where your interests lie and what you hope to do going forward in the industry.
Yeah, and to that point, just be persistent. Just because you didn't get one job doesn't, you know, mean that you're not a great candidate, a great producer, that you didn't interview well enough. Sometimes it just all comes down to things that are out of your control, or, you know, people that fit that specific role at that specific point better. but it's not a judgment of who you are as a producer or a content creator. So don't let yourself get discouraged if you don't get the job that you want right away. There will be plenty of opportunities, and you really just need to keep being willing to make that effort to apply for those things, and you know, things will start to turn your way. I really do believe that persistence is key on the job front.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice. So keep creating.